Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This week on Catch and Shoot 2.0, hey, we're back, and so is the association. We check in on all that's going on around the loop and what has already been an eventful first week. Plus, Otto and I look into our crystal ball to see who will be holding up the Larry O'Brien trophy in June and who will win the individual hardware. But first, Darlene, let's get to it.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. Catch and Shoot 2.0 goes well with both red and white and is perfect with the workout of your choice. Our hosts are Aaron Berlin, a former Kansas Jayhawk who believes the Orlando Magic will win the championship. Eventually. His partner is Otto Strong, a man who has covered the NBA since before Dennis Rodman got his first tattoo. Fellas.
Welcome to Catch and Shoot 2.0. I am Aaron Berlin, along with my partner. He is the one. He is the only. His name is Otto Strong. Otto, what's up?
Hey, man. It has been a while, been a minute, but it feels good. It's crazy that we're back. We're back on time with regular games and all the good stuff. What's up with you, man?
I was going to say, I was disappointed, you know, during our summer break, didn't get one single text from you. Didn't get one single text from you.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You must have been like Otto Goes International or something like that, you know, just off living your best life, not thinking about basketball.
I think it was more two-a-days with Dallas Cowboys than anything else, to be honest with you.
It's okay. My Kansas City Chiefs haven't been anything to watch this year. So
I wasn't going to bring it up, but notice, folks, we're about 1 minute and 11 seconds in. And so there you go.
It's okay. We haven't gotten a Kansas basketball reference yet, but it's going to happen at some point. But anyway, so the NBA season is back. We had an eventful first week. The Orlando Magic looked awful for their first two games. And then you knew I was going to do this. We're going to talk, obviously, LeBron, Sixers, Ben Simmons, and all that. But I have to ask you about this. What happened on Sunday night in the Garden with the Knicks and the Magic? What happened there?
Look, man. We decided to throw you guys a bone. How's that?
Well, so it was interesting because Friday night, I've been paying a little bit more closely attention to the Magic lately. Mostly, yeah. You know, they're in my backyard. The last few years have been really tough, but I'm intrigued by this starting lineup now that they have, where they have five players who are all 23 years or younger. And I'm also very intrigued at what Jamal Mosley does with this club. But it was a tough thing with them basically playing a home and home with the New York Knicks. They open their home portion of their schedule in the Amway Center, get drubbed. Evan Fournier looks like he's the second coming of whatever New York Knick that you want to say, with the way that he's shooting threes, with how efficient he is. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, and it's tough to win a home and home series like that. But I did not expect the Magic to waltz into the Garden and win that game.
Man, I feel like we're just, you know, we're everyone's feeling each other out. Chicago Bulls 4-0. And so people are like, hey, the Bulls should be taken seriously. Have we seen who the Bulls have played? I mean, Detroit twice. I mean, I feel like the NBA, you just have to get a little more time to get into it. But same thing with the Lakers. Like, I do not have 1 foot off the bridge yet. I mean, this is just like, come on.
It's overreactions, right? Like, we all want to make these big statements about what a team is going to be after, I don't know, 7 days of action. And you can't do that. That's why they play 82, right? That's why we do this. And so let's talk about the Lakers. I think they were obviously one of the big statements. Case in point, we are taping this on a Tuesday. This will release on a Wednesday. LeBron is questionable for tonight's game. But do you have any concerns about the Lakers after the first week of the season?
Well, I mean, look, I had concerns before the first week of the season. Like, I think that, you know, it's can they get, I mean, they'll be fine. I think they'll be quote unquote fine if they get to the playoffs and they're healthy. As we saw last year, they got there, but they weren't healthy. And you know, we one and done, and you know, and away they go. So with the roster comprised as it, such as it is, the age of the guys, you know, you're still going to have to ball every night in the Western Conference. I mean, nobody wants to be that, and I'm sure they don't want to do the play-in game, you know, scenario again because of how that went. So on the one hand, I think it's this delicate balance of playing to make sure you've got somewhere between, like, I mean, obviously not going to be 1, 2, 3, but somewhere between, you know, 4 and 6. You know, I'd like to say, but that would be my concern. You just, but how do you want to make sure they have enough rest, but you also, you know, don't want to be scrapping the last month of the season, because that doesn't do anything for you either. If the last month of the season becomes the playoffs, you know, for your team, now you're, you know, so you're right back where you started. So
Well, I was just going to say that if you're consistently having to, like, play every game like it's a do or die situation in March and the early parts of April, then everything that you've done leading up to that moment, whether it's resting LeBron to make sure that he's healthy or roster management to make sure that, I mean, let's be honest, it's the oldest roster in the NBA by a long shot. You have a lot of players who are basically coming together that, I don't want to say still think that they can do it, but have ambitions of winning an NBA title together when they're at their best, right? And I do think that when they're healthy, when they're at their best, if they are working out the way that the Lakers front office thinks that they can work out, then it's going to be really, it's going to go well. But I don't, we're a week into the season. LeBron has injury concerns. I don't see how they stay healthy, how they stay manageable. And let's put it like this. The Lakers, outside of AD and LeBron and maybe Westbrook, they have no assets to play with. They have no money to sign anyone midway through the season. And so this is what they got. This is who they are. And that's a concern if I'm a Lakers fan personally.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's kind of attractive in it from a sense. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the team ten years ago, where, you know, Peyton comes over and some other guys just kind of you know, showing up to do the same thing, you know, kind of chasing a title, and like, well, let's see if we can't get one more out of this group. But I don't know. I'm just not buying it. I feel like, you know, if they get to the playoffs, they get to the second round, that would probably be a huge success. I mean, that's just kind of how I'm seeing it.
10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, a roster that included LeBron James, Dwight Howard, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, and Rajon Rondo, you'd say hands down, probably the best in the NBA, right?
Well, so the key words you just said, 10 years ago. I mean, that's insane. I mean, first off, hats off to all of them to be able to be even in the conversation, to be able to even think that it's possible to do this. And who knows? It might be. I'm just saying, as you know, so many things are going to have to go right in order for that to happen. And then, you know, looking over your shoulder, you know, the Golden States of the world, the Clippers, maybe this is the year. I don't know. You know, the up and comers, the Memphises, they, like, you know, Denver hasn't been quite right. Utah didn't really quite get it together. Like, there's just such a, if any one of those other things, you know, one of those other teams kind of puts it all together and gets on a run, like, really, the Lakers are going to, you know, stop them? I mean, let me ask you this. So Lakers, Clippers, like, do you think this is the year that the Clippers kind of get out of the shadow?
Of the Lakers, mm-hmm. I think they kind of got out of the shadow last year. You know, I think there was a lot made about the combination of AD and LeBron, but I mean, outside of a bubble filled championship that basically had a month and a half of a hiatus for LeBron to get his body right, we have not seen a healthy LeBron through an entire season since his Cavs days, right? Since the last year that he was with the Cavs. He's never had I don't want to say never, because this can come back to bite me, but outside of a pandemic shortened season during his Lakers tenure, we have not seen him healthy for a full year.
Look, I'm going to agree with you on that. But at the same time, I think that pandemic championship was a lot tougher than how people are making out to be. I mean, there was everything from kind of the not knowing. I mean, you know how it is. There are cycles. Guys get their body right. Their mind is okay. I'm in April now, which means X. I'm in May, which means Y. That was blown apart. Nobody really knew what this was, how this was going to work, what it's going to be like. You know, people not seeing their families. And I'll be the first to say that, you know, players talking about not seeing their families. Okay, well, we have something called the U.S. military that goes months, if not years, without seeing their family. So let's put that in a box and just acknowledge that. It's always, you know, just something like facts or facts. But at the same time, there was no travel. So, you know, you basically went back to the hotel. They didn't have to worry about jumping on planes. And I would imagine for a guy like LeBron, that was an incredible incentive not to, or not incentive, but incredible boost not to have to, you know, do all that extra flying at his age. But I mean, but, you know, I think in a lot of ways, like I said, I think the title was, you know, was certainly earned. I mean, you know, teams were coming up.
Oh, I'm not questioning the legitimacy of the title. I'm just saying that there are a few people that know how to train and keep their body right. Outside of like their day-to-day basketball routine. Like I'll put it this way. If Cole Anthony or like Mo Bamba weren't in their day-to-day NBA routine of shoot around, lift, nutrition, all that jazz, right? Everything that goes into like an NBA day-to-day during the season. And you take them out of that for month and a half to two. Do you think they're training the same way? And I would say LeBron's probably training harder just based
absolutely.
Yeah. Because I think nobody has the same work ethic that LeBron does. And so I think he used the time to get his body right, to get his mind right, and to get ready for a stretch run that he knew was coming. And I think that's a lot harder to do in the span of a 6-month grind, right? Like you're not afforded those same opportunities, especially when you know that you're chasing just to get into the playoffs.
Fair. So speaking of chasing, you know, we got a team that is, you know, legitimately going to be chasing now that they don't have their star point guard for a time. But I would be, of course, speaking of the Brooklyn Nets with no Kyrie. What were you saying? What were you yelling into when all of this was going down? And what are your thoughts now?
All right, Otto, let's look at it this way, right? Like one of the reasons I have a hard time like fully wrapping my head around this is Kyrie plays for a team where that he's unvaccinated. Right. And he plays in a city that has a very hard line stance on if you're vaccinated or if you're not vaccinated. But where I'm having a hard time with some of the conversations that are happening is like, if I look in my backyard and I look at the NBA team that plays 10 miles down the road from where I live, Jonathan Isaac is an unvaccinated NBA player that he's injured right now, but he's still allowed to be around his team. He's still allowed to be at practices and do all that jazz, just simply based on the city that he lives in and the rules that happen within that city, right? And so it's tough because when you look at those two players side by side and you're like, well, why is Kyrie getting so much blowback for not being vaccinated where Jonathan Isaac is not, right? Now, on the other side is the conversation that Kyrie has a lot more influence and pull within the league, right? Like there's no doubt about it. Kyrie's voice, his talent level, what he's accomplished and what he's done, he's earned that. But I have a hard time criticizing someone because they can't be part of their team and they can't play with them because of that decision. Now, my personal reasons aside, he should be vaccinated. He should get himself vaccinated because it would help out everybody else around him. It would make his team more comfortable and he could do the thing that he loves to do, right? But it's hard to say that like he absolutely has to be vaccinated because he wants to play when Jonathan Isaac is afforded the same opportunity to play with his team and to be around his team when he's unvaccinated. So, I mean, to me, that means the NBA needs to have a bigger conversation, right, about how they're treating their vaccinated and unvaccinated players.
Well, that's right. So there are a couple of things, as you mentioned. Like one is, does the league need to have multiple, you know, is it fair? Someone could say, is it fair to have multiple policies? But, you know, this country is very diverse. You know, living in, you know, New York City is not like living in, I mean, Orlando, sure, but you know, Oklahoma City, or you know, you could pick any area.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way, Otto. I can walk down the street and not have someone within my shoulders for easily 8 to 10 feet, right?
Well,
Kyrie walks down the street in New York City, he's probably shoulder to shoulder with someone.
Well, guess what? I mean, most NBA guys live in a place where it's more of that existence where they could walk down the street for 8 to 10 minutes and not come into contact with anybody. We're being honest. And on game day, it's the same experience for everybody else. It's not like Kyrie is strap hanging, you know, taking the train, taking the subway to work. I mean, come on,
if Kyrie did take the subway to work, I love that.
Oh, so back in the day, like you used to have ball players that would like literally take the subway to Yankee Stadium and Polo Grounds and all that kind of stuff. But
Ben Zobrist would ride his bike and take the L train to Wrigley Field when he played for the Cubs. Like, why not? Let's bring it back. But let's get this conversation on track. Yeah. Like finish what you were trying to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, like the dual NBA, the dual policies, like I get it because of the city, but I mean, as we've established, players kind of, I think for the most part, unless you're someone who's like living in a high rise in the middle of smack dab in the middle of Manhattan, you know, all right, fine. That's kind of the outlier. Most people, even those who are playing in New York, like live in Westchester or they live in a suburban area and then they go into an arena that has 20,000 people in it. So whether they're, I mean, so there's a lot of similarities there. The part that I really kind of lose my, you know what, is like this bit about having to do, I haven't done my research, like, you know, like, I mean, people have said it before, but like this business about like, you know, let me take out my stethoscope and like go into my lab and do my research. Like, come on, man. Like, you know, but here's my research.
Yeah. So that line is an easy cop out, right? That's an easy way of saying that, like, I don't really want to do the research and I don't really want to look at the larger picture, because what's not being said these NBA players have a full comm staff, not to mention someone like Kyrie probably has his own personal staff and his own personal team that can get him the information for him to make a decision. Right. So
absolutely.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah, it's not like me and you who are maybe like, I'm going to Erica and being like, hey, what'd you read today? You know, or you're going to your wife or your kid.
Right. No, the problem, you know, Here's my research. 700,000 people are dead. Case closed. That's like that. I mean, unless 700,000 death reports are like death certificates are not accurate, which no one is alleging that that's happening, then there's your science. There's your data. So, and I guess the extended philosophy here is that people see a guy like, I mean, people could talk about, you know, role models, Charles Barkley. I'm not a role model. Okay, fine. Put that in a box to the side. The reality is somebody's going to say he didn't have it. He's not doing it. And so that's the part that's unfortunate. There are people who are, you know, like literally living on top of each other, you know, in apartment houses or in other setups that like really, really, really do need to get it. If not for them and for other people in their family. But I mean, that's the same thing we've been talking about for the last year and a half.
Do you think sometimes Kyrie just likes to play the part of the anti-hero?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly comes off that way. I mean, I don't know what the end game, you know, is for him. I mean, but I on a certain level, you do kind of wonder. It's a fair question to ask. Yeah.
Because like there are times, and I remember it during his Duke days. I remember it during his Celtics days, during his Cavs days, where he does want to be admired by the fans, and he does want to be, you know, a symbol for what an NBA player can and should be, right? Yeah. And it just seems like sometimes he has a hard time picking and choosing the stance that he thinks is the appropriate one, almost. You know, like the perfect example, and maybe this is a different wedge, but like, when he told the Celtics fans at an open practice that he wanted to be back, right? and he didn't want to be back. Like, he wanted to go and form a team with someone else. Like, it wasn't a good fit for him. Where, like, sometimes this just feels like he's picking the wrong battle. And in return, it's one, hurting his legacy. It's two, hurting his team. And three, it's hurting a player that I think honestly has like high aspirations. And part of the reason he wanted to go to Brooklyn was because he wanted to win his own championship outside of LeBron. And I don't know, man, like it's, he's perplexing because, and I think a lot of people have thought this about Kyrie for so long, is that like, he is so talented in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like we've never fully gotten to see that.
And I get you. So sticking with the Nets, I mean, I'm just thinking about the other, one of the rules that have come into effect, the emphasis calls we have, you know, my favorite, you know, the jumping into to guys on the foul shot.
That's the worst, right?
The worst being.
Just, I hate that whole play. I hated that play forever. The act of doing it.
Okay, right. Sorry.
Yeah. Like the full act of like physically jumping into a defender because you know it's going to get called every time is almost as bad as the flop. Like it's a smart play. I'm going to contradict myself a little bit. No, it's a smart play on the offensive player because he knows he's going to get the whistle.
Yeah. Right? You can, and if you're Harden or if you're Curry, you know, you're getting 3 points either way. You're going to, you know, either got a 4 point play or you're going to go to the line and probably knock three down. So,
but it's like, why for so long did we penalize the defensive player? Because the defensive player is not doing anything. He's sitting there with his hands up 90% of the time. And if someone's jumping in, you're like, what do you want me to do? You know, like I can't lean back. I can't take a step back because then I open myself up to a block too. So,
yeah, I'm glad that is there, and it was kind of like chuckling when I saw, oh, guys, still, oh yeah, it's right, I can't do that anymore.
But I'm really happy that play is there, because I think it's gonna open up a lot of things. I think it's gonna clean up the game, or at least I hope it does. You know, there's a lot of wonky stuff in the NBA, but I am curious about this, and we kind of closed last season talking about this, and I feel like we always bring things back to the Sixers. One, because they're like the team that just never quite reached their potential, right? It's like me in high school playing baseball. Like, I could have been really good, never reached my potential though.
It's a process.
But Ben Simmons, obviously at the close of last season during the playoffs, he has become famous now, or infamous, for his missed dunk opportunity, right? And it spiraled over into some comments that were made in post game. And then we kind of had this long drama throughout the course of the summer where, would Ben Simmons return to the Sixers? Would the Sixers try and deal him? What was going to happen with the makeup of that roster? Then it comes out, Ben Simmons isn't going to return to the team. He's going to hold out until the Sixers do trade him. Then he comes back for training camp. He participates in a few practices. He's thrown out of practice by Doc Rivers. It's this whole thing, right? I guess the best question is, what is the path forward for Ben Simmons? And outside of some of the things that he's expressed to the team about making sure that he wants to get his mind right, and he wants to make sure that moving forward, he's in the best possible mindset for this club. But I think the larger question here is, Otto, is what is his team outside of the Sixers, like his personal team, telling him? And I've thought this for the long time, like Ben Simmons is not making these decisions in a vacuum, right? Like, he's not personally the one saying, I'm not going back to the Sixers unless they trade him. Like, that's his agent and that's his team saying, hey, you got to get out of Philly, right? You can't be there. They're not doing anything for you. But at the same time, like, what has he done to make himself marketable for another team to take a chance on him?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he's kind of, you know, boxed himself into a corner. I mean, look, you know, all of this comes back to, and I think if we've learned anything over the last, you know, year or so, when it comes to athletes and the performance of certain tasks, that whether they're mundane, like shooting a free throw, or a triple backflip, whatever the hell it is that Simone Biles does, you have to be, you know, your mind has to be right. And we've seen this time and time again. And so I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody, like, well, you know, just get better at it. I mean, but at the same time, there is a certain responsibility for whatever aspect, if it is truly a physical thing, then it's, you know, get yourself in the gym and knock down some shots. If it is truly a mental thing, then, hey, something should have been said before. Now, not saying he has to say to me, but something should have been said before. So it didn't get to the point where people are kind of lampooning him for not throwing it down when there could have been some other more serious issue lurking there. But to bring it back to, you know, what happens moving forward, I mean, unfortunately, I thought things went too hard, too fast, just like crazy talk going back and forth. And now, I mean, if you're another team, do you want him?
No. And that's part of the problem. And right. I think that's where like the genesis of my confusion comes with the way that his team and he has handled this situation is like, and I agree. I 100% stand with what you just said. If your mind's not right and you need help, you need to take the steps to get there. And if this is truly what has been the problem, then I'm happy that he came out to his team. I'm happy that they're having these conversations now and he's taking steps to better himself. But my problem with it the entire time was, if I'm bad at my job, Otto, right? Like if I go to my job and I make error after error after error, and just nothing is ever, if I don't personally take the steps to get better, then how am I marketable at my next job, right? Like what potential employer, if they see everything that I've done at my prior job, like when would they ever go, hey, I want to hire this guy, right? And that is what every single NBA team did during the playoffs. And it's what they've done after the playoffs is they've looked at, one, how that playoff series went down, because everything is magnified in the playoffs. And if I'm a team and if I'm acquiring someone with that contract and his ability, then I'm looking at what have you done to get better since, right? And just everything that's happened afterwards with his messaging, with the way his agent has handled it. If I'm acquiring NBA team, I'm not giving up anything to take him on.
No.
And that's what he wants. Like, if you want to get out, then work with the Sixers to find you a new home. Don't do everything to make it that much more difficult on them, because they can't.
No, exactly. But there was one other thing that you'd mentioned in the analogy of having a job. And if I'm doing my job and there's one thing that I'm, you know, if, you know, I'm working in a restaurant and I make burgers great, I make the milkshakes great, but I always manage to burn the fries. You know, you might want to pull the dude aside and said, hey, this is how we make fries, and or this is how we make a free throw, like that kind of thing, like to some degree. And I, you know, this is where, you know, the kind of the modern athlete and the whole apparatus surrounding the athlete and who has the ability to tell a player, particularly a player who came into the league with Ben Simmons, you know, everything going on around him, you know, does a team, does a coach have the ability to, you know, tell a guy, hey, look, you really got to get better at this. Like that, those are tough conversations, and not everybody can pull those off. You know, certain coaches, I feel like a Coach Kerr, you know, can pull guys aside and has that cred. I'm not saying that Doc doesn't, because the other side of it is you have to have somebody who's a willing participant and wants to receive the information that you're trying to impart.
But it's a good point, because Doc Rivers has won a championship. He's taken teams to Western Conference Finals. He's taken them to championship finals. It's not like it's perfect example. Jamal Mosley, Orlando Magic, right? Rookie head coach. It's not like Jamal Mosley pulling Ben Simmons aside and saying, hey man, I've looked at the tape. I can fix you. I know exactly what's wrong, and we're going to do this, this, and this. Now, Jamal Mosley might know how to get him there, but if those two conversations, one's coming from Jamal and the other one's coming from Doc, who has the more credibility, especially from an NBA standpoint?
Well, true.
It's Doc Rivers, hands down.
True. But you know, that would like Jamal would be in a tough place if say Simmons's free throw shooting percentage was like 65 or 68, but you know, or you're like in the 70s, but when it's not that or not close to that, guess what, dude, you're wrong. It's just like this, it's kind of a cut and dry.
Jamal could literally bring Ben Simmons down to the court that's like 5 feet away from my house and be like, all right, I'm going to have you line up and I'm going to have you go up against Aaron Berlin, who's this schmuck. And we'll see who makes more free throws. And if Aaron makes more free throws, then we got a problem.
And do you remember,
I'd probably make more free throws.
Do you remember like as a kid, like if we played on a team or just shooting around, I used to say this to myself, I'm going to make 3 free throws or 5 3 or whatever it is. And then I can leave practice in a row. You remember doing something like that?
Well, how about this, Otto? How many teams were picked based on kids who made free throws and kids who missed free throws, right? Like you line up and you're like, all right, you make your free throw, you're on my team. Next person makes his free throw, he's on that team, right?
Yeah.
How many teams do you think Ben Simmons missed?
30?
Man, I hate to say that, but it's just like, how is that a skill that was never developed at any level?
I got nothing there. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, I don't want to be the old guy, but the damn.
Okay, real quick, because I do want to talk about the NBA 75th anniversary team, but before we get there, I wanted to get your take on opening night, at least for the Hawks, was against the Mavs. It was inside State Farm Arena. It was a battle of two players that are forever going to be tied to each other. One is Luka Doncic. The other is Trae Young. What happened to the Mavs that night? And does that make you concerned at all for Dallas?
I mean, everything is new with them. They got a new coach. They got a new GM. I mean, obviously the core is Luka and it, you know, forever will be, or at least the next, you know, 10 years, whatever. They got smoked. I mean, was it 30 point loss, 40 point loss? I mean,
it was bad. I,
when you start counting by tens, like I said, I think it's a long season. You're not going to find me overreacting to any loss or win, you know, in week one. I think, you know, if anything, we recall what the Mavs, I think the Mavs put the shellacking on the Clippers early in the season, or was it a Christmas Day game? They beat them by like 50 points. And what happened to the playoffs? You know, they lost. So, you know, to the same team. So like, you know, during the regular season last year, the Knicks swept the Hawks. Didn't go that way in the playoffs. So while you want to see maximum effort every night, you know, you also have to, you know, understand that certain things aren't just going to go now, you know, they start putting up some of these double-digit stinkers a couple of games in. You know, they're, you know, I'm making this up, but they're, you know, 3-7. I'm like, okay, we need to pull it back, have a conversation. But for right now, like,
I'm sure So Otto is not ready to hit the panic button. Not quite there yet. Plus, they were going into a buzzsaw, right? Like, Atlanta's got a lot going for it right now. Home opener, they had just come off an Eastern Conference Finals appearance. They were feeling themselves a little bit. That's a tough situation.
Yeah, and plus one more thing. Hey, the Cowboys are 5-1. I mean, dude.
They're probably going to go into Arrowhead and just like wax the turf with the Kansas City Chiefs.
I never would have thought that was even remotely possible, you know, a couple of weeks ago. But we'll see. We'll see.
It's bad. It's bad, man. I've watched 7 weeks of this, and I'm just like, what's going on here? Speaking of what's going on here, the NBA thought it'd be a great idea to release a list of the 75 players who they deem as the most impactful, the most worthy of the 75th anniversary team for the NBA. One player that I thought was notable that was left out that I think got a lot of run was Dwight Howard. Was there anyone else you thought got snubbed?
Got a little list here. So, I mean, you know, back in the day, I heard it, you know, Alex English was one, you know, Klay Thompson, obviously more, you know, guy who's in the league now, although we have obviously, you know, clearly hasn't played the last couple of seasons, but those would be the guys, I mean, there were some others, you know, Dikembe Mutombo. We could, you know, we could debate that. Some people were talking about Bernard King, but I'm like, I look, I, I know Knicks fans will think I'm crazy, but I think that we'll put it this way. It'll be interesting when it's at 80, when it's NBA 80. Now you expand, but the other issue is, 5 years from now, are we talking about Jokic? Are we talking about Devin Booker? Are we talking about Ja Morant? So, yeah. and this year, even though it's 75, there are actually 76 on the list. So, and then Klay Thompson, presumably.
Okay. So would it have been smarter for them to just say non-active NBA players? Like, here's our 75th anniversary team, but we're not going to include active players.
No, I don't think so. I don't think you can do that. I think you have to have, let me think of it this way. There is the currency of having guys doing their thing right now. I mean, the NBA knows, very smart. They know what's going on. All of the social media, the apparatus was set up for guys to, congrats to, or to send out their, I wish I was, or I thought I was good enough to make this list. But I mean, and that doesn't happen if you don't include current players. I don't think Alex English is going to get on Twitter and blow it up.
Why wasn't I on it?
Exactly.
But I was surprised that Dwight wasn't on there. And we had this conversation a little bit off mic too. And we can maybe spend 60 seconds on this. Mm-hmm. But has there ever been a player that, I'll say this, like when Dwight Howard was at the height of his powers, was easily a top five player in the league. And he had a sustained run as a top five player in the league.
Yes.
But have you ever seen a player just fall off as fast as he did? It's crazy to think, but really when the Magic and the Lakers played in that NBA finals and what was it? 2009, 2010 season it was that year that for the last 8 years, is that fair to say Dwight Howard's kind of been a journeyman ever since he took that first contract in LA?
Yeah, but it's interesting how his career, it's almost like, first act, second act. And it was a hard, as you say, it was a hard turn. Like, usually there's like a kind of like a step to that and then a steps down from that. I was just like a, that kind of, but I think his time with the Lakers, I mean, you wonder how things would have gone if he never wound up with the Lakers, went to another team. I don't know what team it would have been, but I feel like that kind of the narrative changed and it kind of was never got back on track after that, at least not in the way that he had been seen or certainly wants to be seen.
Yeah. And I'll say this, and as our great producer, Daniel Kramer points out, it was the 2008-2009 season. Hey, I'm doing this all off the top of my head, Dan. I'm trying here. But as Dan and Bruce also pointed out to us, the game drastically changed in the last decade. And I can't think of a player that it hurt more than Dwight Howard, because he was the center that you would grow up and say, I'm just going to throw it down to that guy. And Dwight Howard never had to develop a shot, right? Like, he didn't need to. He was that good. He was that imposing. He was that big. And it's a shame, man. It's a shame to see where he's at right now. But
yeah, look, I mean, like, he's still in the NBA. He's playing for a Lakers team that could very easily contend, my hanky is dry. My hanky is dry, man. So that's where it is.
That was dope.
All right. We can't have a reunion episode, us coming back together, new league year, without throwing out some kind of predictions, right?
Of course.
And so the top ones are who plays in the finals, league MVP, rookie of the year, most improved, and this is the one I don't have an answer for, defensive player of the year. I'm always bad at this one. But all right, let's start this with our predictions. Who plays in the finals and who do you currently have winning it all?
Okay. Get ready.
I'm going to mark this in my document and we're going to revisit these in April.
Yeah. Let's do that. I think the Nets problems, I think are going to remain problems. Although it will be interesting if COVID gets to a point where, you know, we emerge from it and they walk back that policy, and within there's enough time to get that done, I could see the Nets making the NBA Finals, no question. But if they don't, I feel like the burden will be too much for them, and I'm going to pencil in Milwaukee going back, and I'm going to say they're going to meet up with the Golden State Warriors. That's right.
What?
That's right. I'm saying it. Clay's going to come back. Clay's going to come back.
Well, I'm just saying Steve Kerr did say they're chasing wins this year, and for a team that good that was depleted by injuries, the best possible thing is for you to have multiple injuries at once so that you can restock your roster, you can restock your bench, you can replenish your draft picks. That's not a bad decision, Otto.
That's right. I'm putting it all in the bay.
Wow. All right. So I do think this one's going to surprise you. Believer in the Trae Young experience, and I am a believer in the Atlanta Hawks. Okay. And I was so impressed with what they did last year during the Eastern Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, let's say this. The Braves are going to win the World Series, and the Atlanta Hawks are going to be right behind them in the NBA Finals. I'm not saying they're going to win the Finals, but I will say this. They will make the NBA Finals this year.
Okay.
You don't seem shocked by that. I really thought that you'd be more excited about that one.
As I'm looking down the list of teams, and I'm like, okay, I mean, four teams in the Atlantic are gonna make the playoffs. But not a single. I mean, but it's very conceivable. Not a single one of them is gonna get to the finals, or possibly even the conference finals. You know, Knicks, Philly, Brooklyn, Boston, they all make the playoffs. But I could very, very easily see Atlanta, Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Finals.
And I'm just saying this: Milwaukee had their hands full with the Hawks, you know, but also, you know, that Hawks team lost to a Milwaukee squad that had an injured Giannis. So maybe I'm overthinking this too much. Maybe I should just go with the tried and true Milwaukee Bucks, because Giannis is that good. And Chris Middleton is that good as well. Mm-hmm. All right. Western Conference.
This is interesting.
This is tough. This is tough because I don't want to ride that Warriors train. Because I can't say the same thing you did. All right, I'm going to say this, and you know who I love, and I think you know where I'm going with this. Grizzlies, man.
Mm.
Going with the Grizzlies and Ja Morant.
Okay.
I will ride Ja Morant as far as he is willing to take me.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. That shoot. That'll be a. That would be an interesting one.
Would you watch a Hawks and Grizzlies series?
Oh, I think everybody would. I mean, you know, I mean, look, those two guys going at each other in the NBA Finals. For what the league is selling and for where they want to go and who's got next and all that, that is a great series. I mean, you can't say that's not a great series.
That would be fantastic. Ja's athleticism, Trae's shooting ability, and by the way, I'll take Hawks in seven.
Okay. Well, Hawks in seven. Yeah, I'll say be safe. I'll say Milwaukee in six. You know.
All right. League MVP. Who you got?
Damn. This is tough. Who you got? You go first.
Well, here's the thing. If the Memphis Grizzlies are making the NBA Finals,
well then Ja.
Then they're riding Ja Morant all the way.
Yeah. Well, then that's clear if they get to that point.
But I'm not willing to say that Ja is a league MVP yet. I think Ja is definitely an all-star.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think Giannis can win it again. I don't think the voters would do that again. The same reason why LeBron's not the MVP every year, right?
Well, you can make the case he wouldn't be now, but back, yeah. I mean, I was actually wondering if there's like some kind of Steph Curry reunion tour or you know, like, you know, going that way. I mean, because Giannis obviously would be the guy, but I don't know, you know, if. To your point, if a Warriors team is, you know, is in a top three spot and it's, you know, clear that Curry shouldering the load, then there you go. So I'll be just like you're consistent. I'll be consistent as well. So that's why actually wrote it down. So, we got rookie of the year.
I wanted to say Jalen Suggs for being spurred at number five, right, to the Magic, but his first week in the NBA has not been good. His shooting numbers have been atrocious. Actually, Wagner has been the better of the two rookies for the Magic this year, which I'm kind of surprised. But I've been pretty impressed with Evan Mobley so far early on. So I'm going to go Mobley. Although I'll say this, nobody has really stuck out to me so far in the rookie class, but I also haven't paid that close of attention to the rookie class so far this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's a long season. Ultimately, I think a guy like, I think the talk around Cade was real. And I think that, you know, he'll, you know, over the course of the year, Cade is where most people are going to land.
Our old producer, Scott Turkin, would be very happy for you.
Well, and then there's that. You know, he's mentioned Detroit once. What do you want to do? Coach?
I don't really have answers for anyone else. I got some
thoughts behind. So,
all right, let's hear what you got.
So, because of what he is probably going to have to do this season and the tightrope that he's going to have to walk, I'm thinking this might be a Steve Nash year.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's going to work, but that's what I'm thinking.
He's got a tough situation. And if he can bring the Nets team together, I definitely think that's going to work. What about Jason Kidd?
I mean, look, I don't see them as, you know, if they were top three, I would say absolutely. But it feels like they're going to be right in that kind of four through six, or probably what am I saying? Like six, six, seven. So I'm like, okay. I mean, yeah, you made the playoffs. Great. But I'm not taking the, you know, that out for him.
If Doc Rivers can get the Sixers team back on track and back to where I think people know that they can and should be, then he easily wins it.
That's the other kind of like,
There's a lot of coaches dealing with different things this year. And I think, and it's not just X's and O's. I think this is one of the tough years to be a head coach in the NBA.
Yeah.
One, because it's the same thing that's going on with the National Football League too, right? Like you have to, one, you're managing your own rosters, and two, you're trying to figure out how you mesh people who have very hardline stances on things. And so it's not a year I'd want to be an NBA head coach, man.
Well, good thing we're not.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
All right, Otto, it'll be very interesting to see how our predictions play out. I'm just saying, Hawks and Grizz. Hawks and Grizz, man. But it is time to wrap things up this week. Special thanks to our producer. His name is Daniel Kramer. And to our editor, my guy, Drew Rich, taking over the editorial duties for this show. Also, big ups to our king of content, our CCO and executive producer. He is the one. He is the only. His name is Double B, Bruce Bernstein. As for the rest of Pure Hoops Media has to offer, the Mike Wise Show each week brings you entertaining takes, incredible stories, and high-level guests. Monica McNutt and King McCoy have Buckets, Boards, and Blocks every Thursday. And BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman have the Pure Hoops podcast on Friday. And Otto and I are back each and every Wednesday with Catch and Shoot 2.0 and your NBA news and nuggets.
Hey, new season, same wish. And we know what that is. It's that everybody gets their shot, gets their booster, get whatever you need to stay healthy. And so we could finally bring this pandemic to an end. But as we all know, we're not there yet. So please protect yourself and others by wearing a mask, maintaining social distance, and washing hands. Don't forget the medical professionals and other frontline workers who are doing their part to keep us safe. So for my partner, Aaron Berlin, I'm Otto Strong. See you next week.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.